This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 84 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max.
Hi, David. How are you?
Good. Sounds like you had an excellent night last night talking about our favorite subject, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I went up to Smith College in Massachusetts. There was a presentation put on titled Commercial Drones in Our Backyards and Communities. And it was a really interesting presentation open to the general public. They talked about some of the good uses of drones. They talked about the restrictions placed on, well, on them and the community in general by the FAA. They talked about the NPRM. And they also had a flight demonstration for the crowd of about 50. They flew a Phantom inside, of course, in a large sort of auditorium up on stage. And interestingly enough, they were so safety-minded that they actually strung up a net across the stage so that if something were to go wrong with the Phantom, the audience would be protected. So very interesting. I recorded a conversation with a couple of the professors after the event, and that's something that we hope to bring to you sometime in the not-too-distant future. I guess my big takeaway, David, was that this was very interesting way for, in this case, the local college to help communicate to the public some of the topics that are relevant concerning drones and answer their questions. Kind of an outreach sort of approach. I thought it was a great thing to do, probably something that others could do in other locations as well.
And it was nice to be invited, so I'm glad you could make it.
Yeah, it was fun. And Drone Mama went as well, so and she had a great time.
We were duly represented, huh?
That's right.
So, we got a lot of news. We've had guests last week, so we got to catch up on the news from last week and this week. Our topics is we're going to give you, I think we're going to, and we're going to do this weekly, we're going to give you an update on the NPRM and our observations, and we'll do that weekly for the first couple of minutes because we know how important that is to all of us who listen to this show.
Right.
A pitcher gets grounded, drones nagging birds for science. Frosted winter roofs. Unfortunately, today we got a half a foot of snow here. I don't know what you got where you are, but
just a dusting. Oh, I'm glad it stayed down there, though, David.
And then we have the airplane geek's favorite biz plane becomes a drone.
Right. Yes.
Nothing like the fact that our favorite airplane on the Airplane Geeks has now become a drone. Mm. Nice to know Piaggio is following our lead. European regulations and talking with ATC. A very funny video of the week, and a little listener mail. So I guess we better get started, and you want to take it away with our FAA, SUAS, NPRM update.
The NPRM, which of course is titled Operation and Certification of Small Unmanned Aircraft Systems, was released, as we know, on February 15th, 2015. The date that counts is when it's published in the Federal Register, and that occurred on February 23rd of this year. And that's what starts the 60-day clock for public comments. So the comment period extends from then through April 25th. Comments have to be in by April 25th, 2015. The regulations.gov webpage for this NPRM includes a link where you can actually view the NPRM document. And it also has a link to the submission page for comments. Now, you can find that. We created a shortcut, so you can find that very easily by going to the uavdigest.com/NPRM, and that'll redirect you to all of this. Now, one thing I noticed is that there's kind of a interesting little counter on that webpage.
Yeah, evidently they're keeping track of how many people have commented, and you evidently saw today that there were now 200, as of today being the 5th of March, there were 246 comments.
That's right. So I don't know how often this is updated. We're thinking maybe it's daily, so it doesn't look like it's a real-time counter, but it will be quite interesting to see how the volume of comments builds over time, and we'll certainly follow along with that. So, David, why don't we start in with some of the recent news?
So, it's that time of year where us on the East Coast, at least the Northeast, look forward to our baseball teams going to various places across the country in warm weather to start spring training. So, keeping that in mind, it was kind of funny to see an article from USAtoday.com. Trevor Bauer's homemade drone banned by Major League Baseball Cleveland Indians. The Cleveland Indians pitcher, Trevor Bauer, brought his drone down to Phoenix, which is where the Cleveland Indians do their spring training. And evidently, Major League Baseball did not like the pitcher flying around his drone, so they grounded him.
And there could be a number of reasons why they might have taken this action, why the MLB caused him to stop his drone flying. Could be because it's associated with a commercial enterprise, baseball. Could be just strictly a safety concern. Could be one of the neighbors as well.
Yeah, evidently, it's their ball field is right next to Phoenix Goodyear Airport, which we know that, you know, the FAA does not want you flying within 5 miles of an airport. So I have a feeling that that was the real issue that, you know, and Major League Baseball doesn't want to get sued by the FAA, you know. So it was kind of a fun story, but, you know, they're trying to make sure that they're protected. You know, they don't need to have somebody sued because the drone goes wire and we lose an airplane.
Yeah, and it's nice to see somebody stepping up to their obligations to keep this safe. So I guess at this point, good for the MLB.
So let's move on to deliberately antagonizing birds for science. This was from popsci.com. How not to fly drones around birds. You know, that was definitely a clickbait title. You had to go click on that.
What's this one about? Yeah.
So evidently, the French researchers are trying to track down the effects of quadcopters on eating or resting birds, and they've done this more than 200 times.
Yeah, I think this is great because it's something I think that we've talked about, something we've worried about, concerns that people flying drones around wildlife could be stressing them, and we've seen many examples of that, rather dramatic. Thinking of the, what was it, a hawk, David, that took out the
DJI Phantom.
Right,
yeah,
the ram that did that.
They pop up very frequently.
So it's a real concern, I think, because we don't want to be harassing or especially stressing wildlife. So these researchers are trying to study this and learn more about it. And so what they were trying to do is approach birds at different speeds and angles of attack, and then look for visual signs of stress. And they learned a few things. They found out that if they kept the drone about 15 feet away, that the birds didn't much care about the quadcopter. It didn't seem to upset them. They also learned that the frequency of approach didn't seem to have an effect. They also looked at the color of the drone, and that didn't matter much. But the one thing they did find is that if they approached the birds from directly above that it did cause some stress, some upset with the birds. And they kind of speculate that attacking other birds or threats would generally come from above. And they thought that maybe that's why they the birds had problems with that direction. But this is just a start. And they noted some other things that really need to be studied to learn more about the effects on wildlife.
And some interesting aspects. Rotary versus fixed wing. Of course, they were at the time they were using a quadcopter. So a fixed wing is a completely, is more bird-like, you'd say, than a quadcopter. Yes. So, I mean, it might definitely have a different appeal. The drone size, the sound of the drone, you know, and they also want to check that, you know, visually, the bird's not seen stressed, but there might be non-visual cues like their heart rate or their chirping or something like that. So they're definitely going to proceed further. And I think this is interesting research.
Yeah, this is a good research area, something that's important. And, you know, here we are with a different technology and we need to learn about the effects of it. And this is a start, or this is one aspect of that. So, so that sounds great.
So you've been dealing with snow. I've been dealing with snow. Here's our weekly snow story. This is from the Boston Globe. And for our international listeners, Boston has had a bullseye all winter long and has gotten close to 100 inches of snow. So one of the towns outside of Boston, Somerville, and this is from the BostonGlobe.com, has hired an aerial cinematography company and multimedia company to fly drones over their municipal buildings to inspect for excessive snow. There's been quite a few roof cave-ins up there.
Yeah, it's a dangerous situation. Not only the snow itself, but also sending workers up there to inspect the situation up on the roof. You know, you've got a lot of flat roofs in cities, and it's just not safe for people. Interestingly, that's one of the items that the FAA kind of stressed in their NPRM announcement, was that drones can offer alternatives that are much safer than using people. This is an example of one. So this company Above Summit, they've been conducting inspections. As of this article, they'd inspected 10 buildings in one day,
which is substantial considering if you have to put a ladder up, have somebody hold the ladder, you have to climb up the ladder, you have to check the roof and then climb back down. You're actually speeding up the process and you can pinpoint the ones that need to have somebody up there cleaning the roof ahead of the other one. So it's a great way to triage the situation.
Sure. Now, it is a municipality hiring a contractor to go perform a service using drones.
Bum, 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 bum.
Yeah, so I'm not sure how that's going to be received. But, it sure sounds like the safety aspects of this, well, you'd like to hope they trump the other perspective about commercial operation.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the FAA might be able to turn a blind eye on this one.
One can hope.
So let's talk about our favorite airplane.
The Piaggio.
The Piaggio. The Avanti, the twin turboprop pusher aircraft that we love on Airplane Geeks. It's one of my all-time favorite airplanes, and I miss them. They don't fly out of Philadelphia anymore. And the thing about the Avanti and its pusher propellers is it sounds like nothing else. You can tell it from a mile away. It's a beautiful, sexy Italian sports car kind of design and beautiful interior. And if you go back to Airplane Geeks in 2010, I interviewed the president of Piaggio for Airplane Geeks when I was out at Oshkosh. So Piaggio has decided that they want to broaden their horizons besides business, and they've created the P1HH Hammerhead, which is a UAV.
That's right. And the maiden flight of the prototype was just conducted. This is a medium altitude, long endurance, a male aircraft The Piaggio chief executive, Carlo Loggi, said, "Today we have compelling reasons to believe that the P1HH will become the first European state-of-the-art male UAS, uniquely suited to perform a wide range of surveillance and security missions at the highest technological level."
The vehicle management control systems, data link, and sensors in the ground station are being produced by Selex ES, and we'll put a link to the show notes. And believe it or not, Italy's already ordered six of them. You know, so what is kind of interesting, and I was thinking about this, is Piaggio went the way with making it strictly a UAV and not an optionally manned aircraft. The Hammerhead is clearly, if you see it, there's no windows there. There's a lot of room in it for electronics and surveillance equipment because it is a medium-sized business aircraft, but they didn't go, and I'm wondering if they're going to backtrack and then eventually maybe do an optionally manned aircraft.
Interesting. It's a great strategy rather than to build and or design and build something from scratch to start with an existing design, in this case, a manned aircraft, and convert it to an unmanned aircraft. There's probably compromises associated with doing that, but in the end, I'm sure that the development is going to be a lot lower. The missions for this, they say, include things like a border control, wide area and targeted surveillance, as well as humanitarian assistance. So it's a pretty large craft, not your small UAS category. With the endurance that it will have, it should really enjoy a number of different kinds of missions.
And the other thing about it is there's an infrastructure built for it already. If you think about it, there's a lot of, especially Italy. Italy, the Italian Air Force operates them as transports, executive transports. So they have an infrastructure for the parts, the wings and such. So that infrastructure is built globally. There are you can probably get service Avantes around the globe. So it's definitely an interesting step. And besides, it was very nice of Piaggio, like I said earlier in the show, to convert our favorite airplane for Airplane Geeks to make our favorite drone on UAV Digest. So with that, let's continue in Europe and talk about ICAO. And again, this is also from FlightGlobal.com. European regulators target harmonized UAV guidelines. So harmonized UAV guidelines, it's kind of romantical for Europe, huh?
Yeah, the European Commission and ICAO, they have the opinion that current air traffic management systems don't readily adapt to UAVs. Instead, they kind of view it as a situation where unmanned systems will have to adapt to the existing air traffic control processes. They'll have to feed the air traffic control processes. But if that's going to work globally, then you need to have unmanned air vehicle regulations that are globally focused. You can't have a hodgepodge of different countries with different regulations. So what they're trying to do is work towards that objective.
What they do is they're creating the single European Sky ATM Research, which is CSAR, a joint undertaking initiative that includes strategies to modernize and harmonize UAV operations. And upcoming RPAS element will facilitate this further. I do like the approach that this says that, you know what, the new technology needs to adapt to the existing technology, not the existing technology adapting to the new one. And I think the FAA is sort of taking that same strategy. How do we incorporate it into the existing airspace? So the EU is going to go enter an R&D developments in ATM. They're going to focus on aircraft of 330 pounds or 150 kilograms or above. So these are not going to be small UASs. These are talking males or bigger.
Which is good because, I mean, so much of the conversation seems to be about the under 55 pound, the small UASs. We've talked before and others have commented that when it comes to creating regulations, the extremes are kind of easy. The very high altitude stuff is easy, relatively, because, well, it generally flies above aircraft. The small UAS category is relatively easy because that's under where most aircraft fly. But it's that middle part where the regulations, the technology that allow commingling of manned and unmanned aircraft kind of becomes a little bit more difficult. So this seems like it's kind of directed towards that medium range, which is good because we need to be developing the systems and the processes in that middle range.
So and like, how do you tell the difference between a hammerhead and a Vontee?
Right.
If you're an air traffic controller, I mean, if we're going to use the other example, so there's your prime example. You know, I mean, we'll follow this up. It'll be interesting that they're thinking a little bit bigger than the rest of the world. So, and this we got from our listener Neil. New system allows air traffic controllers to converse with drones.
I like this one.
This was from one of our favorite websites, Gizmag.com.
Researchers at RMIT University in Australia, they've developed a system that lets drones communicate with air traffic controllers, not by transmitting data, but by using a synthesized voice, talking about, well, drones talking to air traffic control.
We've created R2-D2.
I know.
Actually, we created C-3PO. This is being conducted with TALIS, Center for Advanced Studies in Air Traffic Management, the CASIA, and UFA Incorporated, a software engineering system. The UFA's ATV voice, or Automatic Voice Recognition and Response software, so the drones can verbally respond to spoken information requests over the radio and even act on clearances from air traffic controllers.
Fascinating. Now, this AT voice system is something that they use now in flight simulators, and it lets the user control, they say, the simulation exercise through voice commands using standard FAA or ICAO air traffic control phaseology. So they're taking this application, this software, and saying, well, let's see if we can incorporate this into unmanned vehicles and therefore communicate on a basis that air traffic control does now, which is by voice. It almost goes back to the previous item where they're talking about, the unmanned aircraft changing or accommodating the existing air traffic control system. What better way to do that than to enable the drones to be able to communicate by voice? I think this is, if it works, this is fascinating.
I eventually will give in to our robot masters. This is the part that I thought was really interesting, was UFA has developed several international voice models to support a variety of non-native U.S. English accents and dialects, including Danish, German, Australian, New Zealander, and Cantonese.
That's right. And if they can understand an Australian, it'll probably work. No, I shouldn't say that.
Oh, yes, you should, because bottom line is we still don't understand our co-hosts from Plane Crazy Down Under. So
well, we say that. But that's an obvious question is, okay, so if you can teach this thing to understand pure English, and not everybody speaks the same kind of English, English, of course, being generally the language of aviation, but you do have accents. And so the fact that this software can accommodate those different accents and dialects is critical, I think, because if it didn't, it would have really limited application. So fascinating work going on here. I like it because it's, well, it just seems natural.
Well, thank you, Neil, for sending that to us. Okay, this video of the week is a little corny, but I saw it on the Sunday morning show and I went, I got to find this on YouTube because it's just so appropriate. And what else can you say? It's just drones attacking people.
Right. You've heard of the birds, right? That's the Hitchcock film where flocks of birds are attacking the people. Well, this is called The Drones, and it's part of this Audi commercial. And they essentially recreate the birds, except instead of using birds, they're using these flocks of multicopters as the attackers. Now, I'm sure this is all computer-generated, David. They didn't actually fly these huge flocks of...
No, I mean, if you look at them, it looks like they're all the same. They're all the same hexacopter. It's either an octocopter or a hexacopter, but it's black, it's menacing, and pretty terrifying. And you know, if you saw it coming at you, you'd be scared too.
The punchline in the commercial is basically you don't have to be afraid of technology. And then they kind of morph into the Audi, which happens to save the day in the commercial because the guy gets to escape in his high-tech Audi. But you don't need to be intimidated by the technology, and you'll find a comfort in your new Audi. I guess from a from our perspective, I'm not sure how I feel about the multicopters, these drones being the evil intimidators. You know, we're trying to communicate the positive value, and here they are attacking the residents of this town. So I'm not sure how I feel about that part.
I don't either, but it was just, it was definitely pointed to, and it was like, and the professor here at the house also laughed and thought it was worthy of the video of the week. So we'll look forward to hearing from feedback at the UAV Digest, folks, what you think of the video of the week. So let's get to some quick listener mail. The first one is from our former guest, Ryan Morton. Hi, Max, David. Got behind on your podcast. Moved back to Ann Arbor following a four-month hiatus in New York City. And I wrote back to Ryan and I said, you can get UAV Digest in New York City. I'm pretty sure that it's available there.
Same price.
But he did have some points as he was catching up on episodes. First one was, a few weeks ago you discussed KMEL being acquired, and with the recent news about 3DR's $50 million Series C, both included in Qualcomm. I wanted to draw your attention to Qualcomm's robot accelerator powered by Techstars that many of our listeners might be interested in. And we'll put a link to his blog post about it. It's very interesting about how all Qualcomm sort of combining all of these technologies into one item.
Yeah, great post. Thanks for passing that along. There were some other items that Ryan brought up. He also said that he talked about our mentioning the California attempt to regulate some aspects of the airspace and how that was a bad thing. He says, here's my take on it. And he says, notice my view of how governance should happen, which is the same as why we wanted to fly as part of the pregame show at the Big House. But he says, sometimes laws are changed via the judiciary much quicker than other avenues. I'm excited at the prospect of California versus FAA over the jurisdiction of this so-called non-navigable airspace. That's a long road, but there are certainly proponents that want states to control some aspects of airspace above the grass. And this was actually a topic that they talked about up at Smith College. When you look at the history in the United States of the airspace and how with the dawn of powered aviation, people were concerned about the intrusion of aircraft over the space, the air above their property, how we have this differentiation historically between navigable airspace and then what's below it, which is what you own, basically. And also how the FAA doesn't seem to talk about navigable airspace anymore. Now it's the National Airspace System, which the FAA says extends right down to the grass. So there's this different perspective growing of who controls what in the air above ground level. And I don't think we have a path to a resolution at this point. As Ryan says, this may be something that's addressed more by the courts than anything else. And in fact, the Supreme Court has weighed in on this type of issue in the past. So we'll see where this goes. The world is changing. The definitions are changing. We just have to figure out how they apply in the real world.
Yeah, and he did go on to quickly mention that he did sort of agree with the NPRM And he liked our interview last week. And more to the point, he did tell us to keep up the awesome work. So I think we have to keep up the awesome work there, Max.
Yeah. And in fact, we have some interesting guests coming up in future episodes. We've tried to line up some significant players, folks with a real stake in this unmanned game, people who are doing some interesting things, and people who are influencers in the area. So we'll be bringing more of that in coming weeks.
So with that preview of coming attractions, I guess, Max, we should be signing off.
So we want to thank you for listening to the UAV Digest. This has been episode 84. You can find us at theuavdigest.com. Also, if you'd like to go right to the show notes for this episode, visit theuavdigest.com/84 for episode 84. We've got a lot of links to the items that we talked about, the companies we talked about, some photos. We're going to put that Piaggio in the show notes so you can see that there. And we encourage you to visit the show notes and check us out.
And of course, you could be one of our 3,000 plus followers on Twitter at UAV Digest, our Facebook page, which is slowly growing, but please check us out there, which is facebook.com/theUAVDigest. Of course, we love when we get listener mail and we get emails. So you can email us at feedback@theUAVDigest.com. Or if you want specifically to talk to either Max or I, it's David@theUAVDigest.com or Max@theUAVDigest.com. If you love us, leave us a review on iTunes so other people can find the greatest podcast about UAVs on the planet.
You have kind of a biased position on that, though, David.
Yeah. So I'm very proud of our little show.
And I as well. Okay, sorry to interrupt. Go ahead, continue. Sorry.
Where was I? Oh, yeah, swag. If you'd like to get some swag, you can go to our Cafe Press store, which is /theUAVDigest. And, of course, if you'd like to help the show, you can become a patron at patreon.com/theUAVDigest. And, of course, the last two links are at the show notes. You can click on the links. And, of course, you can always go and follow the NPRM link also from our show notes. So go to theuavdigest.com/84 and don't forget to leave your comments. Time is running out on the NPRM and we want to make sure it counts.
Yeah, this is very important. Read the NPRM, think about it, formulate your thoughts, and send your comments to the FAA.
So with that, this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.